Hi, John.
Hey, good morning, John. And good morning, everyone else. This is John Patika Jr. over at the Patika Wealth Management Group. And we're just welcoming you to our next edition of the speaker series. We have a special guest here that has been coming down here, boy, I don't know, last 3 or 4 years over at the Bel Air Country Club in person. And those 80 to 100 person dinners don't really happen very much anymore with the current situation. But John Towsley, he's a senior strategist with Goldman Sachs Strategic Advisory Solutions. He heads up the Global Market Strategy Team, which focuses on global capital market insights, macro strategy and implementation. He's also been with Goldman Sachs for about 19 years and was named the managing director over there in 2011. Been in the industry for over 28 years, an investment professional and portfolio manager. He's a BYU guy and got his economics degree over there. Got 3 kids over in New York, and you know, him and his wife, Christy, returned back to Salt Lake City 3 years ago, and they love being outdoors. And John Towsley is also part of our UBS Research Advisory Board, where we have other firms like Citigroup and JP Morgan Chase who talk about, and Goldman Sachs, they talk about different investment strategies. So we're able to kick the ball around a little bit and get an idea of what everyone's thinking. So, John, welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
And John, if you don't mind just giving your thoughts here about what you're thinking about 2021.
All right. You got it. Thanks, John. Thank you, everyone, for dialing in today. We greatly appreciate your time. I think if there's anything in the last year, we've learned a lot of lessons, but I've greatly increased my value for time. And the fact that you're giving us a little bit, I will try and be as direct and useful with you today. I'm going to cover a host of different topics. I'll speak for about 20, 25 minutes. And then certainly if there ends up being any follow-up, happy to do so with you. But again, our best wishes to you, your family, your community. We hope you're well and that you are healing. I do want to just reflect a little bit, go look a little bit backwards on a few things. I think it's important as we frame out 2021. Talking about COVID-19, we're certainly excited about the prospects. It should not be lost on any of us doing this call today that we continue to live in a global pandemic where the first priority every day is flattening the curve, containing the spread of the virus, the new strains, the new potential variants, and deploying the vaccine. Now, this is very encouraging news. You know, we unfortunately are now north of about 93 million global cases. We are well over 20 in the United States, but we have seen in record speed the development of multiple vaccines, and we have been able to identify the Achilles heel of the coronavirus, and that is its spike protein. And so there are a number of vaccines being deployed, first mentioned back in November by Pfizer, then Moderna, AstraZeneca, J&J next, and there will probably be at least 10 vaccines deployed. And current estimates of global treatments will be for 2021, about 8.1 billion treatments. And that will cover global population 12 years plus. So we know we live in this global pandemic. It has deeply impacted economies, health, and you know every measure of our life. But there is that proverbial light at the end of the tunnel. We think the vaccine will help us achieve herd immunity. Now, between the virus and achieving herd immunity, there's been a lot of economic damage. And there have been a few things that are going to help bridge that gap till we get there. One is the vaccine, which I mentioned. The other is fiscal stimulus. And if you look at history as a guide, we have dwarfed any measure of both fiscal and monetary stimulus in terms of supporting this recession. If you take a step back and you think about most recessions, there is normally a economic, financial, and inflationary catalyst. There is some disequilibrium that has evolved over time, and that bubble pops, and you end up having the economy recalibrate to a different reality, reconcile the imbalances, and that can take quarters, if not years. If you think about this particular recession, there was no economic catalyst or financial catalyst or energy catalyst or inflationary catalyst. It was a medical emergency in which we voluntarily shuttered global economies and went into recession. In fact, 95% of global economies were placed under lockdown at some point. And 92% of advanced and developing economies fell into recession as a result. And that is the greatest synchronization in the last 150 years, meaning we had more economies simultaneously in recession at the same time. And that was because this was not an economic event. It was a medical event. Now it's become an economic event. But the point I want to make here is normally when you go into a recession, there is some existing damage. But in this particular recession and now the recovery, the foundation is actually in pretty good shape. Consumers went into this downturn with record high FICO scores. They went into this with really high savings rates, with the lowest net leverage in 35 years at the household level. The banking system is bulletproof. Corporate America currently has 25% lower defaults right now than this time last year. So 25% lower defaults than pre-pandemic issues. Now, we clearly know that there are areas where there have been challenges, but at the end of the day, policy, this point I'm trying to make is that policy is being really effective in bridging the gap to herd immunity, minimizing defaults. And we think with this latest announcement from President-elect Joe Biden last night, the package, the follow-on package he announced is about $1.9 trillion. We think it will probably, when you look at the legislative realities of getting it through, coming in closer to $1.1 trillion. You will see much larger checks again sent out again. You'll see a little bit of state and local aid. But at the end of the day, in order to get 60 votes in the Senate, and the reason they want to get 60 votes in the Senate is President-elect Biden will want to use the reconciliation process, which only requires 51 votes, maybe for some other agenda items. And so they're going to try and do a package that will get 10 Republicans to sign on to it in the Senate. And that's going to require probably a bit of downsizing. And obviously, we'll see how those negotiations end up. But the key point here is additional, at least $1 trillion of additional stimulus is likely on the way. Now, if we think about, just to give you a sense as to where we are in terms of recovery, if this time last year, the economy was 100% open, in the depths of the spring, we got as low as 38% open. Today, we are at 67% open. So we've come a long ways from the depths of spring, but we've still got a long way to go. And what we're seeing is that it is a very nonlinear, indiscriminate recovery. There are certain sectors, financial services, manufacturing, construction, that have proven to ultimately be pretty resilient to the virus. And each time we have a second or a third wave, we manage the conditions differently, but we don't fully shutter down those particular sectors. There are other sectors of the economy, the obvious ones like retail, food, lodging, travel, tourism, anything that has a high density of population to service that particular business. Those particular areas are incredibly sensitive to any wave of the virus coming through, but will also be disproportionately benefited by the vaccine. So here's the point I want to make. We actually are, relative to most other firms, more constructive on the recovery because we believe the remaining unopened parts of this economy are going to have a really strong bump or multiplier from the vaccine. So we look at the opportunities and say, listen, we are certainly in a very challenging environment, but the areas that are the most devastated are also the areas that are going to get the most benefit from the vaccine. So here's our basic set of views. For the S&P 500, we expect it to close at about 4,300 this time next year. That's about a low teens return in the market. We expect the bond market to see a modest increase because of fiscal stimulus. We expect rates on the long end to move slightly higher, up from about 115 on the 10-year to about 150. Now, that's a meaningful move. So longer rates will move higher. We think short-term rates will continue to be anchored by central banks buying short-term paper. So you're going to see a little bit in terms of higher interest rates, but not enough to disrupt central bank commitments to continue their easy policy. We believe inflation will move modestly higher and average about 1.8% this year. But with the Federal Reserve's new policy of average inflation targeting, where they will not start to lift off interest rates until inflation is above 2%, not on the way to 2%, but above, we believe ultimately that may have the Fed not raising interest rates until some point in 2024. So we're looking at an environment where you should have ultimately pretty reasonable returns in the stock market, modestly higher interest rates, generally a weaker dollar. And when I mention the dollar, the reason I say weaker dollar is the dollar is what we call a countercyclical asset. And that just means that when there's uncertainty, money flocks to the dollars. And so over the last several years, we've seen the dollar, in our view, get about 20% overvalued. We think it's about 8% overvalued right now. And then as a countercyclical asset, as the rest of the world heals, no pun intended, you should see the dollar continue to weaken as there's this less of this urge to go to a flight to safety. And so the dollar, we think, will probably end up somewhere around 128 versus the euro, which is about 4 to 5% weaker in current levels. And that means if you're a U.S. investor, your non-dollar investments, your global investments may get a little bit of a tailwind from a weaker dollar. And then for the first time, another sector just to talk about real quickly would be commodities. The oil market, base metals like copper, precious metals like gold, almost the entirety of the commodities market has seen massive underinvestment in supply and production over the last several years. And as we recover, global demand should increase, but global production should struggle to keep up. For the first time in many years, we actually think commodities near term look kind of interesting. Our target for gold at the end of this year, 2,300. Our target for oil, about 65. And so you can see that this reflects global recovery in commodity prices moving higher, global recovery in the dollar moving lower, global recovery in terms of interest rates edging higher to 150, and global recovery with U.S. stock prices moving to 4,300 on the S&P 500, and global equities also with a commensurate move higher. Now, I'm just going to take a breath there. I know that that's a lot to digest. Where could we maybe be wrong? And, you know, the answer ultimately is if we were to describe the recovery, we would call it vaccine-shaped and policy-fueled. And so the underpinnings of our view is that the vaccine is effectively distributed. We believe that about 25% of U.S. citizens already have the antibodies, and that anyone who wants a vaccine in the U.S. will have access to it by the midpoint of the second quarter. And we think that will be roughly 50% of the population will have access to it by, you know, within the next few months. So that will get you to about 70, maybe 80% vaccinated or antibodies. And that's about the level you need to really start thinking about herd immunity. So the first assumption we're making is the vaccine is successfully deployed. We think that you'll start to see a ramp up in that here pretty quickly. The other is that policy initiatives will, fiscal policy, there will be fiscal follow-on fiscal policy, very important. The other assumption, and so if that doesn't happen, again, that's where an area where we could be wrong. If the vaccine is delayed in terms of deployment or fiscal stimulus is not achieved, those are all problems for our particular forecast. And then one other point I want to make, the stock market by any measure is expensive. All of the good news I've talked about is pretty much built into those prices. But if you look at the stock market relative to interest rates are expensive, even more expensive. And so one of the important factors about investing is we all want to follow the mantra, buy low, sell high. And it's hard to buy low when everything's high. And so you might be tempted to say, oh, I'll wait on the sidelines. I'll wait for the market to get a correction. I'll wait for the market to cheapen up. And history tells us that expensive markets can stay expensive for years, and in fact, decades, as long as interest rates stay low and earnings profitability recovers. And so the other two major components to our particular view is we believe this market stays expensive because interest rates do stay relatively low. And at 150, if we're right on our forecast, that is still historically very low for interest rates. And earnings recover. And our estimate is that we will return to peak earnings this year. There will be only two countries in 2021 that will have earnings higher in 2021 than they were in 2019 before the virus, China and the United States. So the fact that if we can continue to see really strong earnings growth on low interest rates, that helps our view. If, on the other hand, that doesn't play out, then we understand why, you know, our particular views, that would be a risk to our view. So again, our pro-cyclical view, our constructive view, the argument that the momentum that we saw in the second half of 2020 continues into 2021 based on successful deployment of the vaccine, a next round of fiscal stimulus, rates staying relatively low, and earnings hitting peak levels next year. Those are the assumptions we make. We think each one of those is very, very likely. Just a couple little statistics to highlight about the time that we've gone through. The world's going to be different. We are going to have a post-COVID world, and we're going to reflect to our grandkids and to those who come after us how the world was different once we hit COVID-19. E-commerce would be a great example. E-commerce has climbed to 16% of all retail sales. The increase in 2020 in e-commerce, we did as much increase in e-commerce this year or in 2020 as we did in the prior 10 years. Our 16%, put it in comparison, major Asian economies have about 30% of their retail sales in e-commerce. And so the upside for, like, you believe you get a lot of Amazon packages already delivered, the upside is still really, really significant. This year in 2020, we're going to wrap up about $3.6 trillion in mortgage origination, with about 60% of that being refinancing. The one thing massively different in this particular recession versus the last one was the strength of the housing market. And for every mortgage that is refinanced, you unleash about $400 to $500 in additional discretionary income. So the strength of the housing market is a great underpinning for potential recovery. With the unemployment, with the jobs we lost this year, about 25 million, two-thirds of those jobs have already been replaced. The unemployment rate has gone from a high of 14.7 down to about 6.7 today. We expect by the end of this year, the unemployment rate to be at 4.8%. So 6.7 down to 4.8, about a 2% improvement. But then after that, any move lower after that, we'll have to address some of the scarring that has happened, the permanent shifts in our economy. Some of the things that are going to be different, we've learned that remote education can work. Now, it can be really painful for K through 12, but at the end of the day, I've got three kids in college, and they have been able to progress through their education pretty well remotely. Remote medical diagnosis, so what we would call med tech. I have on my computer taken COVID tests with someone watching me swab my mouth. And the ability to receive treatments, direction, and guidance remotely clearly is proven to work. So med tech, ed tech, fintech. I can't remember the time I had really any meaningful cash in my wallet. We've gone completely digital in the way that I execute commerce. I'm sure you're very similar. Green tech. The one thing we also learned in the last year was how immediately the world responded, the planet responded to less travel, less cars on the road. And I think we've learned some lessons that will become, you know, feed an appetite for being better stewards of the planet and making decisions. Here in Utah, where I live, we suffer from extreme inversions. Just the nature of the valley, you'll get a pocket of cold air that locks in the valley and pollution can't escape. 12 months ago, no one would think about regulation that would say if we're vulnerable to an inversion, we want 70% of those people who would typically drive in to work from home. Today, that type of regulation would actually potentially be accepted. And, you know, because it's immediately, we saw some benefits to the planet. So green technology, ESG, anything that is, you know, again, focused on the planet in particular, property tech, with all these packages that we receive, we need to figure out a better way to receive them rather than just having them delivered on porches or buildings built, you know, in cities buildings are having a hard time processing all the deliveries that they're getting. So there's going to be a lot of innovation that is born out of, you know, 2020 and the implications of COVID-19. We are encouraged by the opportunity set. We think as we move in, we should see the political temperature start to moderate a little bit. We think the economic opportunity set will continue to be robust, and the capital markets will continue to deliver for investors. My last point I want to make before handing back to John is that all of what I've said, while I think is constructive, we do believe we are borrowing returns from the future. And we are looking at massive deficits, moderating earnings, and ultimately the next 10 years is probably going to average closer to 6-7% in terms of equity returns versus the 13% we had in the last 10 years. And so a lot of that's front end loaded because we're in a recovery phase. We're in the first inning of a recovery. We have a lot of policy. A lot of that 6-7% annualized return is going to happen, we think, in 2021 and in the front years. But we also have to think about just being realistic about what the capital markets are going to be able to deliver longer term. We're starting at a very high starting point, very high valuation. And so what I would suggest is that you obviously actively work with your financial professionals and think about what's the right way for me to be taking risk, earning income, and building a portfolio in light of moderating returns. I don't think there's a lot you have to change. I just think you have to understand that the markets ultimately, we're looking at more moderate returns longer term. You want to be positioned in 2020. Whatever made sense in your positioning in September of 2020 makes sense today. So I think there's no seismic changes, but ultimately a dose of reality in understanding that there's going to be a moderation of returns in the future, I think is reasonable. Not 2021, but down the road. So with that, John, let me throw it back to you and wish everybody an incredibly successful 2021. And hopefully at some point we can visit in person.
Yeah, absolutely, John. We're hoping to get you down here in 2022 back in sunny Clearwater. I really think you'll be able to get down here the way these things are going and these vaccines. So thank you so much for your time and spending with us and getting your perspectives and Goldman Sachs' perspectives on the markets. John runs a market outlook called the Market Pulse with Goldman Sachs that comes out. If anyone wants a copy of that, feel free to reach out to me or James. We'd be happy to get you one of the latest editions. And we hope everyone stays safe. Be well. Thank you again, John Towsley, for joining us. And until we talk again, everyone, take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.